Welcome to Hacks and Jacks. It's Sunday, April 27th. We're recording after a beautiful weekend in upstate New York. Scott, how was the weather in Michigan?
For April in Michigan? Not bad, right? Like, I mean, Michigan's basically Canada, at least in terms of like lines of latitude. Like, a lot of people in Canada live south of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. But it was pretty nice. It was pretty nice.
Well, the Tigers enjoyed the warm weather. They beat the pants off the Orioles all weekend with a sweep of my Baltimore team. I ditched the O's cap for a Rocket City Trash Pandas hat, and I still got Adley back there, but I don't know how long he's going to last on the shelf.
Not a great start to the season for him. I keep thinking it's a bunch of talent. He's really good with the bat, good at making contact, and just can't seem to find the magic. The floor is super high. Like, he's always kind of useful, but I see why folks in single catcher, like 10 and 12 team leagues, I see why they're kind of peeking at the wire, being like, ooh, like Carson Kelly just hit another home run. Like, yeah. And he plays like every other day, right? Like, the volume from Rutschman is very valuable, so you have to keep using it. And he hits like at the top slash heart of the order. Got to keep going with it. But that's a tough spot to be in.
Yeah, now he's nursing a hand injury, so we'll see if he goes on the IL this week or not. Speaking of IL, we've got injuries and transactions to talk about. And a handful of guys went to the IL this week, starting with a couple of Minnesota Twins. Luke Keyshaw, the rookie second baseman, and then Willie Castro, the veteran speedster, both to the IL. Who do we look at Minnesota for at-bats? Are we going to really turn to Eddie Julien?
Probably not. Again, at least not against lefties. This is a team that has been known to platoon quite a bit, so it's hard to get like too into anything. Brooks Lee is, you know, his job is safer, but it was always pretty safe. You know, maybe some guys get some extra time, but not to the point that you care really in a mixed league. I think the name I'm watching right now to see if he can turn it around, because we're seeing just a few signs of life, that's Carlos Correa. He's been a tough guy to roster so far this year, but he's healthy. Healthy Carlos Correa generally shows us that across any significant period where he's healthy, he's good. Like, he's just good. So I know I've scooped him in a couple leagues, not because I saw this specific thing that makes me think he's turning it around. It's that I've seen a lot of Carlos Correa over the years. I've seen him work through these slumps, and I'm willing to kind of go scoop him. As long as he's healthy, he's got a shot at being a good fantasy shortstop. And he did have three hits today, so that's something.
Well, Texas Rangers shortstop Corey Seager also on the IL. Are we fully into Josh Smith season?
What does fully in mean? That's actually a line I use a lot when people say, oh, you know, I get a message in Discord or in the AMS like, oh, are we in on him? Like, what does in on mean? Right? Like, do I think this is a guy who's going to get some extra opportunities and maybe in the back of a deep league roster, he's interesting for now? Yeah, that's a lot of qualifiers in one sentence. But yeah, I think that's a thing that could happen, right? Like, I'm somewhat interested because he's leading off. I don't know how much he's going to play against left-handed pitching. I don't know if they're going to keep him in the leadoff spot. There's, especially since they've taken Marcus Semien out of it, who I can, even though he hit a little bit this weekend, I still remain very, very concerned about what's going on with Marcus Semien.
And we've also got a handful of outfielders that have hit the injured list as well. I'll run through them because some of them are slightly less fantasy relevant. Tampa Bay Rays outfielder Jake Mangum, Baltimore outfielder Tyler O'Neill, Cleveland outfielder Lane Thomas, and Milwaukee outfielder Garrett Mitchell. And then, of course, Chicago White Sox rookie infielder Chase Mydroth. They've all hit the IL. I mean, is any of this really affecting your fantasy teams in 12 leaguers?
So you probably had scooped up Mangum if you were trying to get some stolen bases, and it worked. And that outfield remains incredibly crowded. The call-up of Chandler Simpson, who, again, has been interesting, right? He's probably not going to steal 100 bases this year, but he is running. He's making contact at the bottom of that lineup, especially when they play lefties. We do see him lead off against righties sometimes, not all the times. It's weird. They almost have him leading off every other day, regardless of the handedness of the starting pitcher. It's really weird. Don't ask me why they're doing that, because they're having Yandy Diaz, who's finally turning things around, kind of flip between first, like leading off and hitting third. There's no rhyme or reason to it as far as I can tell, but that's what they're doing. They're the Rays. That's what the Rays do. This is very on brand for the Tampa Bay Rays. The problem, of course, is coming back. I mean, Cameron Meisner has shown that he should probably get some extra, you know, plate appearances. He slowed down just a little bit, but they're trying to get him those. Jonathan Aranda's working through a slump right now. They want to keep giving him plate appearances out of the DH spot. Christopher Morel is hot right now. He's going to run super hot and cold, Christopher Morel, because he has big contact problems. I just talked about this in the Discord and gave a more lengthy dissertation on how to tell if a player is likely to be prone to hot and cold streaks. One of the biggest tells is zone contact. If your zone contact's below 80%, you are likely to have a lot of swings up and down. It's very hard to keep that profile for very long. That's what Christopher Morel has. I've fallen in love with this before because he hits the ball real hard, but he doesn't hit it often enough. So, he's getting playing time, a lot of it. This whole thing is just, they're chock full of outfielders that they're willing to use. So I don't think I'm holding any of those guys outside of Tyler O'Neill on my IL if the IL has been any sort of crowded or I've got fewer than like four or five spots.
Oh, we talked about some guys that hit the IL. Let's talk about a couple guys who are coming back. And good news for Mets fans, they get catcher Francisco Alvarez and utility man Jeff McNeil both back off the injured list, which Brett Beatty is a roster casualty. He gets sent to AAA Syracuse. McNeil, Alvarez, either one of them pique your interest for a fantasy perspective?
If you're streaming catchers these days, I don't hate streaming Francisco Alvarez. He's got power. I think I almost like Augustin Ramirez better, who just showed up in the last hitter list right towards the back end of it. I think I like it better, but if we had gotten both of them as like debuting prospects at the same time, we would have been talking about them the exact same way. They were incredibly similar in terms of how they were scouted and what they brought. They're these power hitting catchers who could play every day, who, you know, might deserve some DH at bats, like that level of bat. We're hoping that they can be a real impact. So it's fine if you're streaming catcher to go, but he's not. I have him lower on my list than I did start the year. And part of that is just because a couple other catchers have sort of come up and been useful. And it's I talk about it a ton in the article. I'm going to talk about it a lot today. It's that replacement level. The catcher replacement level in 10 and 12 team leagues with single catcher is really high, which means you don't have to hold guys unless you think they have the upside to be much better than the replacement level. Francisco Alvarez could be that, but so could Augustin Ramirez, and he might be out there too. Right. So there's a couple guys that kind of meet that criteria. Yainer Diaz could definitely be that. He might be sitting on the wire because people got tired of waiting for him. There's a couple, you probably have a couple options for guys to just scoop and wait and see. Right. So it's, you know, someone might've cut Logan Ohapi because he's really, really been slow. And part of that is because of the same issue he's got that I talked about earlier. He's got some contact problems. But yeah. So there's a lot of catchers out there. He's one that you can be interested in, but he's not going to be jumping to like, you know, a top 100 ranking or anything on the hitter list. Probably be in the back 130s, 140s.
So staying on catcher there, how many catchers are unreleasable right now in those 12 team leagues? Like how many guys are really above that replacement level that you're not willing to drop right now?
At any given moment, it's going to be somewhere between like around eight. And then some of them are going to be on the IL at any given time. In some weird cases, a team might be holding on to two of them, which means it's actually more like not like you're getting one more person that has to stream catcher. But it is worth noting, and this has come up a lot in the last week or two that I've noticed, trading, like do not scoop a catcher to try and trade them. And the reason is because your league mates in single catcher leagues. Now in two catcher leagues, you can try this, but in single catcher leagues, nobody wants to trade for your catchers. They just don't. I don't want to compare them to kickers because there's a whole other set of things people think about kickers, but in terms of nobody trades them, nobody like you don't scoop. Oh, this kicker's doing good. I better scoop him so I can trade him. That's how people feel about catchers. And again, even good ones, right? Like legitimately good ones. People just don't care because if they feel comfortable at catcher, they're like, I don't need to upgrade a catcher. I'm fine. Right. Some people don't even think about the position at all. The reality just is that. So It's about eight. So there's anywhere from 2 to 4 people in your league, probably streaming catcher or sitting on a catcher, hoping that they become one of those guys. It becomes undroppable. So yeah, it's, again, you're not fighting with that many people over free agent catchers. That's the more important point there. There's just not that many people fighting with you for him. Now, again, in two catcher leagues, totally different. In one catcher leagues, it's sort of like the old days of streaming pitchers. Nobody was doing it. So you got to pick whoever you wanted. It's like that with catcher. Streaming catcher, they're all out there all the time. Nobody's rostering more than one. They only, almost every time you'll see it, someone's dropping a catcher to add a catcher. So if you are streaming, you're going to have guys to pick from. And that's what's making it hard. Those, unless that catcher, someone who I think can be a top, like who's close to being a top 100 hitter right now, they sort of fall down the list. Cause I'm like, well, there's going to be guys, right? Kybert Ruiz was undrafted in a lot of leagues. He's a guy that you can just pick up, especially in points leagues. Hopefully he was drafted in that format, but maybe not. Like Sean Murphy's kind of come out of nowhere. I had sort of dismissed him and he's hitting a couple home runs. Don't know how sustainable it is, but he's certainly worth grabbing, holding, right? Doesn't really matter what I think about him rest of season. What I do think is like for rest of month, sure, right? If you've been streaming catcher, that means like it's never, and I know we've talked about this before, you're not ever just dropping a guy in isolation, right? It's always for something, right? It's to activate a guy off the IL or it's to, you know, pick up somebody else. And what matters is who that somebody else is, right? So again, I'm not dropping guys like Wilson Contreras. I know he's had a slow start. I'm not dropping those kinds of guys. But again, if you've been streaming at catcher, do I think Francisco Alvarez has more upside than say Dylan Dingler? I do. I think long-term there's a lot more upside. Does that mean I think you need to go cut Dylan Dingler right now to go pick up Francisco Alvarez? Not necessarily, because what I don't know is whether Francisco Alvarez for the rest of the season, if you just held, if he'd be better than the level of replacement that's in your league, right? And the more shallow the league, the more likely that the answer is no. It's not going to be better than replacement level, because replacement level is not who the 10th best catcher is, right? It's the best catcher that someone, like basically the replacement level is one guy lower than the best catcher that someone's holding and isn't going to drop, right? The next guy, that's replacement level, because everyone else is going to burn and churn. So yeah, it's, you know, if you've been rostering Hunter Goodman, like maybe, but I think they're going to be in Colorado for a little while, so I'm not necessarily making that swap yet. I'm trying to think of other struggling catchers. If for some reason you're still holding like an Alejandro Kirk or a Ryan Jeffers or a Gabriel Moreno, or yeah, I think the toughest call to me right now, this is a lot of talk about catchers. I'm sorry you didn't plan this, but I'm doing it anyway. I think the toughest call I'd be trying to make right now is JT Realmuto. That's the one where I'm like, if I need power, I think I'm interested. If I'm trying to get like, I wish I could say safe ratios, but JT Realmuto ain't doing that either. He only stole 2 bases last year. He's got a lot of, you know, just like with Marcus Semien, there's a ton of tread on the tires. I think he's going to be better, right? I think a lot of what he's got right now is a little bit of bad luck in terms of like he's hitting the ball right at guys kind of thing. Like the expected stats are a lot better than his real ones. He's hitting the ball plenty hard. It's not like he's degraded that way, but he was not very good last year. And he's certainly not been good this year, although he does have 4 steals. So if you're like so desperate for steals, you might be able to say, okay, I'll hold on to Realmuto just a little bit more. But if you're searching for power, Realmuto was never going to be a guy to give that to you. Francisco Alvarez might be a guy that gives it to you. I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, and the main selling point for Realmuto was kind of his longevity and his playing time. And, you know, last year he only hit, you know, 380 plate appearances in 99 games. So that's not exactly an endorsement there for his health either, although so far so good. But we'll see. That was a lot of talk about catchers, Scott. Let's move on to a different position. We've got a couple of shortstops returning from the IL. So the deepest, or arguably the deepest position in the game, gets deeper as Washington Nationals shortstop CJ Abrams and St. Louis Cardinals shortstop Mason Winn were both activated from the IL this week as well.
Yeah, and here's my problem with CJ Abrams. You're going to plug him back in. You got him for steals. He's going to be real streaky. He doesn't have a contact problem. Like he actually does make contact just fine. You can be streaky without without having contact issues. In fact, if you're a hit and run type player, like you don't walk, you just try to put the ball in play, you can go through some slumps too. And you're going to be especially prone to them because part of it is just the old spinning of the BABIP wheel, right? Sometimes it doesn't spin your way. You get a couple, you know, the know, you get snake eyes a couple times in a row, boom, you're getting out, even though they're decent hits. And also he doesn't hit the ball terribly hard. So the margin for error, he needs it to go. He really needs line drives to kind of fall for him when he's not hitting home runs. He needs those ground balls to squeak through. He's fast enough to run them through. But anyway, you're going to be holding him. You're going to hold on to him for the rest of the season, probably, even though he's going to have times where, you know, towards the end of last season, he had for like a month and a half, his WRC plus was like 50, right? Half that of an average hitter. That's something you deal with because he can run. Mason Wynn is troubling for me because Mason Wynn was very interesting as a leadoff hitter. And the Cardinals seemingly have absolutely no desire to put Mason Wynn at the top of their lineup, right? Even against lefties. Today, they face a lefty. Who do they put there? Lars Nootbaar. Now, he's been hitting really, really well this season overall, but they used to platoon him a bit, and now they don't, right? Like, it's the leadoff guy here is definitely Lars Nootbaar. So with Mason Wynn batting ninth, he doesn't hit a lot of home runs, right? He'll probably still steal some bags, but this isn't like an elite speed streak. Stole 11 bases last year in 150 games, and I'm not sure his ceiling is a whole lot higher, maybe 15. So now he's got to try to get to that number with significantly fewer plate appearances. That's the beauty of leading off. You get a bunch of plate appearances. He had 637 last year. He's going to probably have about 100 less if he keeps hitting ninth for the rest of the season, 100 less. Like, just that's, you know, when you, that's like 18% of your production. You just take off, you just cut it out because you didn't go to the plate that many times, right? Like that's a big deal. That's a lot of plate appearances. So I am not holding him. I didn't really advise that you hold him when he got hurt. If you want to scoop him because you see something in over the coming week, go ahead. Or you're in a deep end all only league where you just need a guy with a pulse and a glove and health. So, you know, that's fine. But in a mixed league, I'm just not that interested.
We'll take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk some prospects that have gotten called up recently, including a certain first baseman from the Athletics. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. Brett Ford here with Scott Chu. And we're just discussing some prospects that got called up this week, a handful of young names that have, some of them making their MLB debut, some of them returning to the major leagues. This week, Pittsburgh Pirates called up outfielder Matt Gorski. The Chicago White Sox called up infielder Bobby Dalbec. The Minnesota Twins called up infielder Mickey Gasper. And Detroit, the Tigers brought up the third baseman Jace Young. Scott, any of those names do anything for you in 12 team leagues?
In an OBP, there's some interest in Jace Young. He takes plenty of walks, but he's super passive. The strikeouts have been ugly at the major league level. And I think he's going to sit against most left-handers. So in a batting average league, I'm not interested. In an OBP league, it's more like I'm desperate at third. This is a guy who's got eligibility, or, you know, if he didn't, he'll have it soon. I'm pretty sure he did though from last season. So he maybe, right? Maybe. But the other end, no.
Well, we get to a prospect that does matter for fantasy baseball, regardless of league format. The Athletics have elevated former first round pick, their first baseman, Nick Kurtz. Scott, we got into Kurtz a little bit after the show last week. You know, discussing him in with our YouTuber, you know, the YouTube comments and things like that, but didn't really get a chance to talk about him on the show. You have him ranked 114 in this week's hitter list. Not to spoil anything, but why are you so high on Kurtz coming up?
This is a weird one for me. One of the reasons I was able to put him higher than I normally would for a guy debuting is I took the Athletics at their word that he was going to play every day. And he is their best defensive first baseman by a wide margin. Tyler Soderstrom is not good at it. He's not a good defensive first baseman. He does not appear to be a very good defensive outfielder either. Neither is Rooker. I still think there's some big questions about that log jam. What I do know is that while he's up, Nick Kurtz is probably the one least affected by the log jam. I think they are going to try to keep Kurtz in the lineup. Now, here's the thing. I ranked him up at 114. In a lot of leagues, first base has gotten pretty deep because you've been able to scoop a guy off the wire or very late in drafts, and they've worked out. So I think there's a good reason to scoop him. I think that this is a very, very highly regarded prospect, you know, top 25 prospect, guy with big power and a good hit tool. Now, how quickly that hit tool is able to present itself in the major leagues is the big question. So he was striking out 26% of the time in AAA for his short stay there. I mean, exactly 97 plate appearances, right? So not quite 100. And he was striking out that 26.8% of the time. Right now, he's striking out 42.9% of the time, but that's 41.2% of the time. He lowered it slightly by striking out only once today. He's getting some hits, right? He hasn't walked yet, but he's getting some hits. He's putting the ball in play. So I'm still intrigued. I do think this is a special bat and he's worth stashing in your bench, but that range of guys, I'm glad you mentioned it, the 114. You can't spoil it. I released it a couple of days ago. But 114, the difference between 114 and 140 is not as much as you'd think, right? This is often true of the back end of Nick's list, right? The difference between a guy who gets ranked in like the 50s and then ends up in the 80s ain't much, right? Like it's a tool. It's like, oh, hey, this guy's now got he's got a thing that I can really lean back on and say, yeah, this is it. So I do think he's going to get more time. You know, they didn't call him up just to send him down this fast, right? He's going to get plenty of a shot. He's going to play first base every single day. Maybe they sit him against certain lefties, but I don't know, probably not. Most of their power hitters are lefties. They can't really afford to just bench their left-handed power bats. So I think Kurtz should be able to hit for a decent batting average. I think that he should start showing us some power soon. It takes a second to get used to the fact. Remember, this dude flew through the minor leagues. Coming into this season, he only had 50 professional plate appearances, like exactly 50. They were awesome. But when you progress that fast, you don't get a full taste of pitching, right, at that level. And the major leagues is the biggest jump by a wide, wide margin. It's a huge jump to get to the major leagues. I do think the strikeouts might stick around for a little bit as he works through that. I think quality of contact so far has been good enough. He hits the ball really hard, but we already knew that. Right. And he hits, you know, an average exit velocity of 94.4 miles per hour. It's awesome. The problem is Kurtz is hitting it on the ground a lot. And that's why his expected slugging is only 273, because you're never going to get past, he is never going to get past first base on a ground ball unless it's like an error. It's just not going to happen. So it's, yeah, I think the quality contact will start to come around. Right. Because again, he's missing a lot. I think he can fix that. But that, of course, is always the first thing to watch. He's worth holding for a little while. But if you made that move, that's because you were willing to take the plunge. You had to know when you picked up a rookie with such little experience at the big league level. When you did that, you said, I'm committing to this for a few weeks, right? To see how this plays out. At least I hope you did, right? If you want to just throw him back. But unless you're in a dynasty league, trading him is going to be really hard because guess what? Everybody's got first baseman now. And the ones that don't probably don't want to flip. Like they're probably holding a guy who should be better, right? If they're weak at first base, it might be because they had Christian Walker or Vlad Guerrero Jr. Those guys are going to be better. So they're not going to be interested in trading with you. They'd rather just keep what they have and hope it turns around, right? So you're going to be in a tough position probably for the next 1 or 2 weeks. You should keep him on the roster. You don't necessarily have to start him if you've got somebody else. I do think Kurtz can be special. I don't know if that's this year. And I don't mean that in like the condescending way. Like, oh, I don't know if it's this year. I mean, like, I honestly have no idea if he's going to be able to figure out these issues this year or later. Getting your quality of contact in the major leagues is very difficult.
So obviously Nick Kurtz, you know, high ceiling, low floor. Where do you draw the line as far as, you know, in a 12-team league? If you're picking him up, you know, if he is somehow still on the waiver wire, you know, your whole league is sleeping under a rock, you know, where do you kind of draw the line as far as who you might consider dropping? You talk about that replacement level quite a bit. You know, obviously with such a boom or bust type of prospect, where do you draw the line as far as the risk you're willing to take to roster Kurtz?
Yeah. And I mean, this is something that folks in the NFBC have to deal with, right? Because unless he was drafted in your league, the NFBC doesn't allow guys to become available till the waiver period after a guy makes his debut. So there's a ton of fab going to be moving around in the NFBC, TGFBI, all that stuff. But with Nick Kurtz, the real question is going to be, what else do you have, right? If you need him to be your guy at first base, I think you're just going to keep going as long as he's playing every day. I think early on in a rookie, these rookies that we scoop up right away, right? Like we talked about Cam, it's a very similar conversation that we had about Cam Smith earlier this season. And the biggest thing was like, yeah, you should watch the performance stuff, a couple things to watch there. But the biggest thing is make sure he's playing every day, right? That's the number one. You can't roster these guys if they're also not going to play. I talk about risks all the time and I put them in three buckets, right? Playing time risk, performance risk, and injury risk. Right. So and by playing time, I mean, when I'm healthy, how often do I get to play? And if you have playing time risk and performance risk, which every single guy making his MLB debut has performance risk, he has quite a bit of it, right? They all do. So once you add a second kind of risk into the mix, it becomes a whole, like it's a multiplier, right? In fact, it's more like an exponent than anything else. Like it adds a ton to the worries that I have. So as long as he's playing every day or, you know, 9 out of 10 days, I'm going to hold. And I'm not going to start really pushing unless we get to, I'd say, you know, call me back at 50 to 75 plate appearances and let's see how he's going. Let's see how that strikeout rate and walk rate specifically are doing at that 50 to 75 plate appearance mark. And if he's still playing every day, then we can start talking about, okay, is it time to jump? I think you got to just let it go for that long.
Oh, we're going to take a quick break so that Scott and I can put in our fab bids for Nick Kurtz in all of our NFBC leagues. But we'll be back with Scott's top 150 hitters list after this break. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. It's Brett Ford here at Fade That Man on social media. And I'm joined by Scott Chu at If The Chu Fits. And we're here to talk about his top 150 hitters list. Scott, you updated it this week. A lot of guys moving, a lot of guys added to the list, and a lot of guys falling as well. Let's start with some of the guys who have skyrocketed. We'll jump right to tier six. Ian Happ, currently ranked number 42. He jumped up 10 spots this week. Talk about Ian Happ, the Chicago Cubs outfielder.
I don't have a lot of exciting things to say about Ian Happ. I've never had a lot of exciting things to say about Ian Happ, and that's fine. Ian Happ leads off for an offense that is smoking hot, and that's a job he's likely to keep all season long. It's a job he's going to hit somewhere in like the top three spots in this batting order against every type of pitching. He's going to, I love the low strikeout rate for him, 17.4%. It's not like so low, like, oh, it's never been this low, but this is lower than anything we really saw last season at any point, including in the rolling charts. He's always took plenty of walks. He's very, very safe. And I think he is well on his way to setting, assuming he stays healthy, which he has for the last several seasons. I think he's getting about ready to set a new career high in runs scored. It was previously 89 he set last year. I think he's got a decent shot at 100 the way this offense is moving right now.
Well, we stay in the NL Central. Let's talk about Wilson Contreras. He's in tier seven, bumped up to spot number 46. He's come up 12 spots this week after a slow start. What's changed for Wilson Contreras?
Well, if you listen to us and held him, you know what's happened. He started hitting, right? Like it's that simple. I know everyone was panicked and they saw all those strikeouts. And what did we tell everyone? I literally would just pull out the rolling chart and say, guys, we've seen this before. And it turns out fine. We all saw the movie, right? Land Before Time. We all saw it. Doesn't matter what number I say, I'll tell you that the little dinosaurs get in trouble and then everything works out. 27 times that happened, right? That's what his rolling chart was telling us. And this is just Land Before Time and it's happening again. Right? It's number 28 and they found a new dinosaur and there's peril and then it goes away. And that's what happened. And that's okay, right? So Wilson Contreras hitting, much, much better. He's hit a couple home runs. He looks like Wilson Contreras. The strikeouts are all but gone, right? I mean, he's just really, I don't know what was troubling him right away in the season, but striking out just 15% of the time in his last 60 plate appearances, two home runs, 134 WRC plus because he's hitting 309, slugging 473. He looks like Wilson Contreras. This was a guy that some projection systems had as like a top 2-3 catcher. People were cutting bait, and I, not to pat myself on the back too hard, but like, we told you to get him because he's a good hitter and it had been 2 weeks. This game is hard, but not because of this. Like, not because of the decision on what to do with Wilson Contreras. It was to keep him.
Oh, the only difference between Wilson Contreras and The Land Before Time is that Wilson Contreras won't make you cry halfway through the movie.
I'm still watching him, but yeah.
Yeah, also that. Yeah, tell me you have kids without telling me you have kids.
Well, we're not starting that. I'm not trying to remember which one they watched last time, because it's the same movie over and over again. Good for them. It works, right? They just go straight to DVD, make some money, and go home. But to do that 27 times, that means something.
Dinosaurs live forever, man. It's
crazy. Famously, they don't, but these ones
that's
do.
Fair. Okay, good point. speaking of dinosaurs, well, okay, Cedric Mullins isn't that old. Baltimore outfielder Cedric Mullins, he's in tier 9, spot number 68 on the list. He's up 25 spots. Seems like he's the only Oriole that can hit the ball right now.
I knew that he'd been doing well, but I wasn't really paying attention to how well he was doing. The walk rate just skyrocketed, right? He's walking much more than we've seen. And again, I usually tell people, like, oh, look at the rolling chart. It might not be more than ever. It's just about more than ever in terms of like 15 to 20 game samples. This is the most he's ever walked. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to keep doing that. But going into today's action, I believe his rolling walk rate for the last 15 or so games was 20.3%. That's ridiculous. That's a guy who's now being allowed over the last couple of days to also lead off against lefties, being the leadoff. This offense is going to get better. And if he's allowed to lead off there, like, there's no way that when Colton Cowser comes back, they're going to just say, okay, oh, we're back to Cowser now. If Cedric Mullins is hitting and hitting well, he's the leadoff guy, right? He's got speed. Cowser doesn't. And if he's walking, that was the thing that Cowser could do that he wasn't. So, and also Mullins strikes out considerably less. I think he can lock this job down. And that's very exciting. That's how, again, another guy who, you know, like, there were some concerns, but they're mostly about playing time. Now that we've sort of gotten rid of that kind of risk, it's just regular old performance risk now, right? And he's performing great. So that's a good way to move up.
Yeah. And it feels like, as an Orioles fan, someone who watches a ton of Orioles games, it feels like he's getting the Mike Trout treatment as like the only hitter in the lineup who can do anything right now. So that 20% walk rate might actually go down as the rest of the lineup improves, but yet to be seen. Hopefully, as far as an Orioles fan, hopefully the Orioles can start hitting the ball. As a baseball fan, hopefully the Orioles can start hitting the ball again.
And it's fine if he stops walking, because, like, he's fast. I'd actually prefer he run, but, like, yeah, I'd rather he run, maybe take two bases instead of just get walked for one. There's only so long they're going to keep Gunnar Henderson down. I got to be on the RotoWire podcast last week. That was a lot of fun with Eric Halterman. We talked about Gunnar Henderson. I'm like recalibrating my expectations to maybe he's more of like the 2023 guy than the 2024 guy for this season, just because some of the injuries might have slowed him down. But Henderson's going to turn it around. I do think Rutschman can turn it around. Jordan Westberg is going to be streaky because he's really aggressive, really and early in the count. Great article last year we had called The Westberg Paradox. I encourage you to go and look at it. But it really talks about what Westberg does. That's attack early in the count. Same for Gunnar Henderson. They both attack hard early in the count. It can make you a little streaky as you're adjusting to like pitchers doing new things at you early in the count, because they kind of know you want to swing and you're going to have to start adapting for that. But I think he can make a turnaround. Question marks on Urias and Holiday. Well, not question mark on Urias. We already know what he is. We know what Ramon Laureano is. I don't know if Heston Kjerstad is going to be. And I mean, he's very up and down right now, and he'll lose some playing time eventually, but this offense is going to turn around. And when it does, Cedric Mullins will be there waiting for him.
Yeah. Shout out to former Pitcher List author Tanner McGrath for that Westberg Paradox article. It is available in the Pitcher List archives, or you can just Google Westberg Paradox Pitcher List and you can find it.
You could probably just do the first two words. There's not a whole lot of things they call the Westberg Paradox. So it should be good.
Well, now we get to the cover athlete for this week's hitter list. It's Washington Nationals rookie outfielder Dylan Cruz. He's in tier 10, ranked number 75. He's up 27 spots this week. Scott, Dylan Cruz is flipping the switch this week. It's like he all of a sudden remembered how to hit a baseball. What's going on there?
Well, it's funny because Dylan Cruz, I mean, this was a top prospect, right? We're talking coming into this season, top five prospect, basically across the board. He's got a hit tool. He's got power. He's got big time speed. He can do it all. He had a bit of a slump to start the season. It was ugly, right? It was very ugly. Right up until a 2-home run game on the 19th. Technically, it had gotten a little bit better because he went on this, you know, he stopped striking out so much. So really, if you just go back to like April 15th, I'm not going to sit here and say this special thing happened. It's not like last year when they're eating chicken parm and Austin Wells tells Anthony Volpe about something and all of a sudden he magically goes off for like 2 or 3 weeks. This is a little less conspicuous than that. What I'm telling you is the one thing you can start to look for to see if a guy's turning it around, see if the strikeouts go away. We saw this with Jackson Chourio last year. We saw it. Dylan Cruz is a good example of it this year. Same for Wilson Contreras. This was a guy who stopped striking out, and that was sort of a sign, right? That he's seeing the ball better. He's getting moving. Over those last 42 plate appearances for Cruz, it's a 9.5% strikeout rate. And that was before today's action. Today he did strike out twice, but he hit another home run. Dylan Cruz, I mean, this was huge upside. We told you not to cut, even though the StatCast data was bad. That's okay, right? StatCast does not tell you necessarily, but StatCast is not predictive, I will say, right? It doesn't tell you what he's going to be. It tells you what he is right now. It's very good at telling you about what a guy is right now. It's very descriptive. It's not predictive. So yeah, the StatCast data was bad because he was playing bad, but he can start playing good, and the StatCast numbers will improve the more he does that, right? That's just a feature of it. And so, you know, we got someone in the comments asking Austin Hayes or Dylan Cruz. Austin Hayes had a great weekend in Colorado. He's about to go home for a long road stand in Cincinnati. I think he's a great streamer. Dylan Cruz is a potential top 50 hitter. Austin Hayes will never be that, right? Right. You know, as well as anybody, Austin Hayes is an aggressive contact hitter with 20-ish home run power, who's extremely streaky because he'll start hitting ground balls right at the shortstop every single day for a month, right? So Austin Hayes, a nice streamer right now, if you need one, but Dylan Cruz could be a staple on fantasy rosters for years to come. That we're just talking about the difference in upside between those two players is like short-term upside. Anyone can be good, right? I say it in the hitter list every single week. Anyone can be amazing for 50 plate appearances. Anyone, right? Kyren Paris. I hate to keep bringing him up because I think he could be a great player, but that's exactly what it is. It's anyone can be good for 50 plate appearances, but 100, that's a little harder. 200, that's really hard. A whole season possible, right? Like you good for a whole season means something worked, but just because you were good for one doesn't mean you're good for more, right? We have all kinds of one hit wonders. So you really want to try to evaluate like what are the skills going on here? Austin Hayes is an aggressive contact hitter. He doesn't strike out too much usually, but when because he's very aggressive swinging the bat, he'll have these really, really ugly stretches where he's absolutely unrosterable. Like you'll think about cutting him in NL only leagues. He gets so bad when he's cold. Dylan Cruz is a guy that, again, staple of a roster type of upside, top five fantasy prospect. I mean, this guy's the real deal. I think it's going to be up and down because he's a rookie. And he only, you know, he didn't play that much last year, only 132 plate appearances last season. And we didn't see a whole lot out of him, but we're going to keep seeing more. We've got 55 games so far for this kid, 18 stolen bases, 6 home runs. That's a pretty darn good start, even if the ratios stink.
So what are the things you're looking for? Like how do we remove the confirmation bias, right? Like how do we take out the fact that, oh, we think Dylan Cruz is good and we think Kyren Paris isn't that good. You know, how do we look at these two kind of parallel breakouts 2 weeks apart and say, hey, this one's sustainable. This one's a flash in the pan. What are the key things that you're looking for?
It's funny you mentioned confirmation bias because we're evaluating human beings. You actually are allowed to have a little bit of confirmation bias. If we said, hey, we think this guy is going to be able to hit the ball hard. We think he's going to be able to hit it in the air. We think he's going to be able to run real fast. And then he comes up and does those things. It's like, yeah, we scouted him, right? We thought he could do that and he's doing it. That's something I want to see. With Kyren Paris, it was like, yeah, we really don't think he's that. And he's doing it anyway, right? That's something where you can say like, well, is it possible he's changed his game and can do this now? Sure, right? Joey Bats did it forever ago. Just came out of nowhere, started being a power hitter. No one thought he'd ever be one, right? It is possible, but it's something you're going to be very skeptical of, right? Because human beings fear change deep down in our souls, even if we don't want to. And it's hard when guys break out of little boxes. But I will say the easiest thing to confirm is when a good player is doing good things, right? That's the easiest confirmation, not just because of the bias. Yes, there is a bias there. Because someone who's done it before and is doing it again, I'm going to believe in that, right? Someone who's never done it before and they're doing it for the first time, I'm going to fear that, right? Now, there are some other numbers you can use to try to help a little, right? So whenever you see a guy with a zone contact rate below 80%, that should be a big red flag, right? Because when you're swinging at strikes, if you miss more than once out of every five consistently, you've got a problem. Very few players can survive with that. Right now, Rafael Devers is like at a 66%. It's always been a little low. He's kind of weird, right? Him, like Aaron Judge, Kyle Schwarber, they can sort of live in this range, but we didn't necessarily believe it all the way at first, right? It was like, oh, he strikes out a lot. Like Aaron Judge was not a superstar right away. We worried about the strikeouts, right? And he found a way to make it work because he hits every time he does connect, it's a freaking home run. So when a guy has that really low zone contact rate, that's something to worry about. When a guy is putting up a lot of ratios and it's all line drives, we're talking like 30% line drives after, you know, 15, 20 games, I'm going to be really skeptical of that unless they're a slap hitter. Like I know, you know, Luis Arraez, even Freddie Freeman is a very like line drive focused hitter. Those guys can do like 25 to 30% for, well, not 30, but they can do like 25% for a whole season. Slap hitters, those guys that are just trying to dink it over the second baseman and the shortstop, those guys can put up line drive rates that are high for a while. Line drives are the most likely things to be a hit. They're almost never home runs, but they're very, very likely to be hits. They're sort of the best category of like hit. Generally, if you just say you get to pick one, all you know is a ground ball, a line drive, or a fly ball, you should pick the line drive every time. It's almost certainly a hit. It probably is a double. I mean, maybe a single, probably a double, could even be a triple, probably not a home run. They're very, very good. They're also extremely fluky, right? Most players are going to settle somewhere around 20%, right? Sometimes a little less, sometimes a little more. So once you start seeing a guy with like over 25%, over 30%, it's like, are you actually like, is this the type of hitter you are? Or are you just kind of, you know, the difference between a ground ball, fly ball and a line drive, round ball, round bat, it's not much, right? So that can change. Those are the two things you can look for right off the bat. Is it just slapping a bunch of line drives that's just inflating it? And eventually those are either going to go right at players or they're going to be a little bit lower or a little bit higher. And that's where the defenders are on line drives. They're a little bit shorter or they're a little bit further. That's why line drives are always hits, because it's in between. So it's something you can look for, the zone contact. Dylan Cruz doesn't have any of those problems. He just hits the ball. he hits the ball fairly hard, not like smoking hard, but 13.6% barrel rate. So, you know, he's doing it. The confirmation bias is that this is what we thought he could do, and he's doing it, right? That's when you build something. If you're like I work with folks that do code, right? When you build the code, I'm not saying it's going to be bug free, but the first thing you try to see is it doing what I think it's supposed to do? And when it does, you're like, okay, this is probably good, right? But if it's doing something you didn't expect it to do, you're like, like even if it's a good thing, you're like, oh, that's actually kind of convenient. I don't know if that's actually good though. Cause is it, you know, you got to do a whole bunch more testing to be like, is it always going to do this? Is this something that's gonna, you know, is it only right in these scenarios and not some other scenarios? You have to be more skeptical because it's not something you expected it to do when you wrote it, right? It's the same thing on the scouting report. You kind of got to think of them that way. That's how you can kind of say like, okay, he's doing what I thought he could do. I love that, right? Chandler Simpson is slapping the ball and running fast. That is what I knew he could do. There's some other things he's going to have to prove to me that he can do, because when you hit the ball on average, like 77 miles an hour in the major leagues, it's going to be very hard to be successful. It's incredibly hard. Now, Chandler Simpson could do it. If he just keeps slapping these little line drives and running as fast as his little legs will carry him, it is possible, right? But it's going to take a little time for me to see, because like that is a very rare profile. And so you got to get, you're really careful with it. But again, he's doing what I expected him to do. That's why I believe in it.
We pivot from Cruz and we'll talk about a couple of first basemen here. Several guys, like you said, first base, super deep this year with all these breakouts kind of in that I won't call it a lower tier, but kind of guys that we weren't necessarily expecting for draft season have all kind of popped off at the same time. Ben Rice, he's in tier 12, number 92. He's rose 18 spots this week. And Kyle Manzardo, he's in tier 14, ranked 112th. He's come up 21 positions this week. And then our buddy Spencer Torkelson, first baseman for the Detroit Tigers, he's come up 20 spots. He's in tier 11, ranked number 78. Talk about this trio of first basemen, why we love them so much.
Well, you know, Torque. So again, the confirmation bias is real, right? I wanted him to hit the ball in the air. I wanted him to hit it real hard, right? That's what I think Torque can do. And I know he's going to strike out a bit when he does it, but as long as he does it, I'm interested. And if he brings something else while he's doing it, that's gravy, right? The walks for Torque are gravy, right? It's cool that the Torque's walking a bit. But the main thing is that he's getting the ball up in the air to the pole side and he's hitting it real hard. That's what we've expected him to do since he got drafted as one of the best college hitters of the last decade. And he's doing it again, right? And he's done it before, right? We saw him do it once at the major league level. He's doing it again. He's doing it somewhat similar to what he was doing before, which is what we wanted. That was a 30, 35 home run caliber hitter. So that's why we love him. The more he does what we hoped he could do, the more we believe it. Ben Rice is sort of in this boat as well. So Ben Rice has a ridiculous barrel rate right now, 22.8%. No one's going to do a hard hit rate of 61.4% and a 22.8% barrel rate for a whole season, right? Maybe Judge. Ben Rice might be real good. He ain't that. The only concern with Ben Rice is we did see it fall apart with strikeouts, especially after an initial wave. That was unfortunately about this long. So this is really the moment of truth for Rice. I do think he's made some adjustments and hits the ball so hard that he can get through it, right? However, there is just a little bit of pause in my heart about like, it's coming up to an adjustment period. This is what we saw last time, very similar rise. It's been sustained a little bit better. But again, this was about when it started to fall and it went down hard. Like this dude's rolling 15 game WRC plus at the end of last season was negative, like negative. It was really bad. So I am hoping Ben Rice works through it this time. But as long as he keeps hitting the ball hard, I'm going to keep believing. And then Kyle Manzardo, he moves up just because the Guardians are letting him play mostly. And that's been a big problem for Manzardo throughout his career. They've platooned him a lot. He did sit twice recently against a righty and a lefty, but for the most part, he's been allowed to play. And when he's played very well. So, you know, again, he doesn't have the power upside of like Torque and Ben Rice. He's just not that style of hitter. He hits a lot, at least in the minors, he hit a lot more line drives. In the pros, those have turned into fly balls. I'd like to see him maybe focus a little more on that line drive approach. It probably a little better suited to what he's trying to do. He doesn't have that like elite max exit velocity that's going to carry him like a Torque or a Ben Rice. He's just not going to do that. He's not going to have the same gaudy hard hit rates. He might have he can probably post as good of a barrel rate, but overall the hard hit rate won't be quite as high. I'd love to see him get a little bit more line drives, but he's playing, doing what, you know, I think we all hoped he would do. And the batting average is going to come around, especially when he stops hitting a million fly balls. Because again, fly balls are outs if they don't leave the yard. The vast majority of the time, they got to leave the park. And Manzardo can do that, but he's more of like a, you know, maybe a 25 home run guy. He actually never hit more than 22 in any full season in the minor leagues. Granted, they don't play as long. So, it's a little different. But he's probably like a 25 home run guy. He doesn't have that 30, 35 upside as Ben Rice and Torque, but he's a very, very solid hitter, very high floor for him, especially if we see that line drive rate just get up to 20-ish percent. He's the type of guy that could even do like 23, 24, 25%, and that's when we'd see the batting average step up to like 260, 270.
Well, that covers the kind of the biggest risers of the week. When we come back after this break, we'll talk about some of the guys that have fallen off over the past couple weeks. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. Brett Ford here with Scott Chu. Scott, there's been a handful of players who fantasy managers are a little bit upset with recently. Let's talk through some of the fallers on your top 150 hitters list this week. We'll start in the Toronto Blue Jays outfield with Anthony Santander, tied for seven, or tier seven rather, 51st on the list. That's down 18 spots this week. What's going on with Tony Taters?
Anthony Santander, as an Orioles guy, you saw him. He's a, I mean, it's a very classic trope for him. He's a streaky power hitter, and he's probably going to jump up again later when he goes on a hot streak. And there's a, you know, you could kind of get at me and say like, oh, you never should have moved him in the first place. He's coming off a career year. So I'm still trying to get a gauge of what is the most likely outcome this year. Right. And this is probably, it could, he could really finish anywhere between like 40 and 70. Depending on how quickly he breaks out of slumps and things like that. That's what I'm getting a gauge of for this season. He did a good job last season breaking out of slumps fairly quickly, not letting him get too deep, and really letting those power spikes get really, really high. So that's what was so great. I haven't seen him do that yet. And the Blue Jays offense has significantly underperformed for the last like 3 years. And that, you know, thinking about that a bit has really worried me. They get like some random bursts of performance, like, you know, Vlad Guerrero Jr. last year after a little while, like really spiked and it was great, but they've had trouble really sustaining success in that offense, even though we always thought they should. So that was just a little bit of a thing that worries me. but it's also outfield, right? So outfield replacement level is crazy high. Santander is always going to stay above it, even when he's cold, even though you're going to argue with me about it sometimes because his slumps are ugly, because slumps are ugly, but he's going to stay above it. Now, the issue I had with Michael Harris, who fell further, right? 27 spots. They originally were, I mean, they were originally even closer together than they are now. Harris, I'm starting to worry that we've seen flashes, but since the beginning of last season, he's been average or worse a lot more than he's been good. I point this out in the AMA and I showed the rolling WRC plus. It's not pretty. It's a couple big spikes, but mostly it's flat and bad. So I'm getting worried that he's closer to what might be the replacement level in a three outfield league than I hoped coming into this season. And also, as that team gets healthier, as long as Michael Harris is not leading off every day, it's a worry for me. Like, I don't love that they were willing to just say, okay, how about you, Verdugo? Like, why? So Michael Harris, now that he's batting seventh, he's been much better over the last week, because they always do that when I drop him. I mean, we'll get to it more later, but they just do that. But anyway, Michael Harris, I hate that he's batting towards the bottom of this lineup. And as Ronald Acuna Jr. come back, that's only going to push him down, right? Well, actually, if Alex Verdugo keeps leading off, it'll probably just stay the same because they'll just not play Alex Verdugo anymore. But that's my concern, is that he stays at the bottom of this lineup that is not the powerhouse it was a year, 2 years ago.
We'll pivot out of the outfield and we'll move to first base. The Pasquatch, Vinny Pasquantino, Kansas City Royals first baseman, tier 12, ranked 94th, down 38 spots this week. Rough stretch for Vinny P. What's going on?
Yeah, let's actually talk about Vinny P and Yandy Diaz at the same time. Even they're actually sort of similar hitters, but Yandy, of course, has done much, much better over the last week. And he'll get raised back up just a little bit, especially because he's still hitting first, third, and that's always good. But the real thing with them is twofold. Number one, they were slumping a little bit, but the most important thing is that all these first basemen coming up, it actually brings the next first baseman down that were in their range closer to them, because now the replacement level has gotten higher, right? And sometimes your rank comes down because I'm like, look, in a 12-team league, your position value just isn't the same as it was, right? Whenever you do projections or you do auction calculators, they add this number that's just like your positional adjustment, right? Catchers get a big one. Otherwise, they would always just be the worst on your projection calculators. And first basemen are usually sort of like in the middle of the pack, but it's falling, right? There's like a couple bucks. These guys were all sort of in this middle range where a couple bucks really does move you quite a range in terms of how I think you are. If I, you know, the difference between an $18 player and a $15 player can actually be a lot of points in the ranks, because there's a lot of guys in that section that are good, right? It's those middle rounds. The middle rounds can always be weird in the draft because you're like, man, all the guys I want to pick right now have ADPs two rounds later, but I want to pick them now because that's just the way the talent gets distributed in the middle. So a big part of the fall for Pasquantino and Yandy Diaz is that they are mostly high floor guys, not high ceiling guys. They're high floor. And the replacement level has been raised up with five or six first basemen. Like, no joke. Between Kurtz, Soderstrom, Torkelson, Rice, Manzardo, like all those guys, that's five more first base. That's almost half of your league's requirement for first basemen in a, if you don't have a corner infield, it's five of them have been added, which means the replacement level has gotten a lot different. And then there's still Jonathan Aranda out there, right? There's going to be people that have been holding on to Christian Walker. Like, he might've hit some wires. Like, there's a ton of first basemen out there. So some of the high floor ones had to come down because there's especially a lot of high ceiling guys that have come out between Torque and Rice and Soderstrom and Kurtz, especially these big high ceiling guys. Comparing those, especially in shallower leagues, to the high floors of Vinny P and Yandy Diaz, that calculus got a lot different now with how many options you have. Now, Eugenio Suarez, on the other hand, dropped him because he looked terrible. Like, let's be clear. He looked horrid, right? I would have absolutely said you were fine to drop him and try to scoop somebody up. If you were in the Kurtz scenario, I would have done that. And of course, he took that personally, right? And then he became the 19th player in Major League Baseball history to hit four home runs. Here's the problem. And it's not quite the same as the Kyren Harris problem, but it's a decent example to use. Pick up Eugenio Suarez right now. If you want, if you've got a big hole at third base, that's fine. But you don't get those four home runs, right? They're gone. And he's highly unlikely to do it again. Now that I've said that, he's going to freaking do it because the world is a cruel, harsh, miserable place. But Eugenio Suarez, like, he's a streaky power hitter. He's always been a streaky power hitter. And these ups and downs are really erratic. And the older he gets, the more erratic they'll get. He was amazing at the end of last season, came out this season, very first weekend he hit it hard, and then just collapsed. I mean, we're talking one of the worst players that was rostered in fantasy leagues or in a majority of fantasy leagues for the last like 2.5 weeks. And then he hits four home runs. And he probably did it on a lot of benches. And your instinct's going to be, I'm going to start him now. And maybe that works out, but you lost that production. You have to try not to let it. Hitting four home runs in a game is more than I ever thought he could do, but hitting a bunch of home runs and if you told me he did it over two games, I'd be like, yeah, that sounds like Eugenio Suarez, right? Cause he'll do that for these big spurts. And then it kind of goes away. So like Kyren Paris, aggressive contact issues, power, sort of a power hitter. When you picked him up, he'd probably already hit three or four of those five home runs. You got one of them and then sat him in your active lineup for a week and a half and took a bunch of zeros, right? Canceled out all the good that those maybe two home runs he hit you right away were worth, because you're like, oh, I'm still going to chase that. Eugenio Suarez, we got the book on. Like, at least with Kyren Paris, we didn't have the book on Kyren Paris. Like, we kind of did, but maybe the book had changed. Eugenio Suarez, we know, is a streaky power hitter. Even in his best years, he was a streaky power hitter. Especially without the rabbit ball. So that's what we know he is. So if he's got a good matchup, you should absolutely start him, right? That's fine because he seems like he's hot right now and there's no real way to measure heat unless it's luck driven. So sure. But don't let the fact that you missed those four home runs make you spend 2 weeks while he's flailing to keep him in your lineup, right? Don't go chasing that. I mean, that's classic, like, sports card. Like, that's the rare hit. It's in there. Somebody's case has it, but don't go chasing, right? Like, it's okay to sit him if he's not doing well, especially if there's some interesting third baseman out in your league right now.
Yeah, I've got Eugenio Suarez's weekly stats pulled up. Week one, 4-for-14 with four home runs. That's a .286 average. Week two, 2-for-20. Week three, 2-for-21. Week four, 4-for-22. So that's three straight weeks below the Mendoza line before this past week where he went 7-for-17 with four home runs and five RBI. So like you said, you're going to suffer through one, two, maybe 3 weeks of just miserable ratios, counting stats, et cetera, just to catch, lightning in a bottle for that 4 home run game.
Yeah. And what we're looking for, mostly with younger players. So let's use Jordan Beck as an example. He had an awesome weekend in Colorado. They're staying in Colorado. Maybe he'll do a little bit more fun stuff. Jordan Beck, you're not going to believe this. He's kind of a streaky power hitter. He's got real issues making contact in the zone. It's just under the last season and this season, it's a little under 80%. And he's got big strikeout problems and he never walks. So it's going to be hard to do that for extended period of times, especially when you're making this constant adjustment from the Coors effect, where balls now move more or less depending on whether you're at home or away. So with Jordan Beck, go ahead and scoop him if you want, right? Especially when he's going to be at home, go ahead. You're chasing power in the outfield, go ahead. He does have it. The question is, when the dip comes, how long does it last and how far does it go, right? How bad is the slump when it comes and how long does it last? With Eugenio Suarez, we know, like, for every good week, we kind of expect 2 or 3 bad ones. But the beauty for Eugenio Suarez in many cases is those good weeks or weekends that you suffered through do make it worth it because he like wins you the league in a night, right? Like basically in one of my points leagues, I was like, oh, it's real competitive. And now it's not. It's over. Like just, I mean, ended it. I'm losing by 50. And guess how many points Eugenio Suarez scored on Saturday? 50. He just ended it. So Eugenio Suarez is going to be like that. He's going to be streaky. Jordan Beck, I'm probably betting against generally in terms of like long-term going to be valuable. He's worth streaming to see if maybe he can get out of his slumps faster, right? The perfect example of the streaky power hitter is Kyle Schwarber. You sit him in your roster and for 2 weeks, he's terrible. And then he goes on a 3-week long bender where he carries your whole team, right? That's just what he does. And that's why you stomach, even in head to head, it's especially difficult. And in Roto, you're just like, I set and forget. And I know in the end, it's going to look like this. And head to head, you're like, man, he's killing me. Like, yeah, but he's going to save you. And that is going to be in the end of the day, you put it all in the wash and comes out on a big positive for Kyle Schwarber. What we don't know for Eugenio Suarez is that this late in his career, does it come out to a net positive, right? The slumps are really bad. As you listed out, they are really bad. Can he get enough of these power spikes for us to keep him around all season and say, fine, tank me for 2 weeks in that one spot. I'll try to make it up elsewhere. Cause when you're hot, you'll put up the production of 2 players. How often can he hit those spikes? That's what we don't know. He did it quite a bit at the second half last year, but remember the first half, he was terrible, right? And most people that got all the juice from Eugenio Suarez last year got it off the wire, not draft day and holding. So hoping that Eugenio Suarez can just get back to these spikes a little bit more often so that you don't have to worry about cutting him every third week.
Well, that about wraps for Hacks and Jacks. Scott, is there anybody or anything that we missed that you want to touch on before we sign off?
Well, we did talk about Torque and we didn't mention, but Tarek Skubal is amazing and we all love him very dearly. Even though you just watched him mow down a bunch of poor innocent Orioles that were probably just scared when the pitches came. But I do want to say, please, please, please keep in your minds right now, what is the replacement level in my league? And if you don't know the replacement level in your league, generally speaking, go to a ranking or projection you trust, maybe one or two of them, and start finding the guys at the top of those, at the highest guys in those projections or rankings that are on the wire. And when you get to like a tier or a chunk where you start finding a couple of them, especially at a certain position, that's generally your replacement level. You can say, oh, that level of player is generally going to be out here, right? Like that's what I'm going to be able to at least pick him up if I take this gamble and it goes bad. Because what happens when you're able to do that, right? If the Nathaniel Lowe's of the world are always kind of just like right on the edge of your waiver wire in a 12-team league, which might, very well be the case, or the Riz Hoskinses, or, like that kind of player who you already know what they are, knowing what that level is changes what kind of gambles you're willing to make. So in a league where the replacement level at first base is like bad, right? It's, not guys that you really would have thought of on draft day, or, it's Andrew Vaughn. I'm not going to be so willing to take that many risks at that position. Cause if it doesn't work out, I'm trying to win with Andrew Vaughn, right? That's not a fun feeling all the time. I hope it is one day, but it is not today. Whereas if it's, you know, if there's always a couple hot first basemen out there and they have some sort of, you know, some sort of skill to lean back on, like Ryan O'Hearn is always out there. You're like, okay, I know what I can get from Ryan O'Hearn. I know that that's going to be the floor. If this gamble I'm taking on Aranda doesn't pan out, I can always go and get Ryan O'Hearn for a little while until I find the next gamble. That's the kind of decision you're able to make. In outfield, especially in three outfield leagues, you're going to find that replacement level is crazy high. That there's always like guys who hit maybe in the middle of the order, but for a bad team, or leadoff guys who maybe just don't necessarily have a lot of power, but are pretty good, right? Or in good situations. That's how you can make that decision of, should I cut this guy? Well, how much better than the replacement level would he be? Not in like even peak. I'm just like, you know, if he gets to half of what he was projected to be, how much better than he is his replacement level? Kind of thing you should know, kind of thing that helps you make these decisions. And that's how you can take those gambles. The first base replacement level was so high, it was easy for people to scoop Kurtz because they were probably sitting on three of them, right? You're like, well, I'll let one go. It was hard. It also makes it hard to trade. It actually also helps you in trade analysis. You're like, why should I trade for this guy if he's replacement level, right? It's sort of like Nick when he talks about the Tobys, right? No one trades for Tobys in mixed leagues because they're just average pitchers. They're the guys that are always on the wire. They're always there. They're always going to be able to give you almost a quality, like the guys that'll give you an almost quality start and maybe four or five strikeouts in 5 2/3. Those guys are always there. So that's that might be your replacement level. And that's how you know, like, should I take a gamble on this? Well, if it doesn't work, I can always go get one of those guys. And I know how to deal with that. I know how to live with that, play the matchups, whatever. So just really think about your replacement level at each position. Catcher is a big one. First base right now is a big one. And just know where it is so you can start making some of these tough decisions on, should I cut this player? Should I scoop this player? Is it worth the risk? A lot of times the question we're asking you is, well, what's the replacement level here?
Scott Chu, well above replacement level, his top 150 hitters list available every week on pitcherlist.com. That's going to do it for Hacks and Jacks this week. I'm Brett Ford. He's Scott Chu. Scott, where can we find you other than Pitcherlist?
Yeah. So if you're on X or Twitter, it is at If the Chu Fits. If you're on Blue Sky, Scott Chu, .pitcherlist.com. You can find me at either of those. Also, I'm always responding to the comments. And of course, on Fridays between noon and one, I start an AMA. Real bump it in there, have a fun discussion, usually around like 400 something comments between the replies and the original questions. Just tons of stuff in there. A lot of cool analysis that I don't always have time to do for the hitter list. But you know, I throw out some rolling charts in there or some analysis on players that I don't have time to just write up every single 150 player every single week. I'd go nuts. I only do that during draft season. So lots of fun stuff in there. You should check it out.
Excellent. Well, for Scott, I'm Brett Ford. You can find me at Fade That Man on social media. We'll be back next week with more hitters. Thanks for tuning into Hacks and Jacks. See you later.